That 1-1 on a narrow body, though, I felt like you could dance in that aisle. That was...
It is a very wide aisle. It's a very wide aisle.
It was just so cool. It was almost eerie. It was like, am I getting on a private jet? Like, I know I wasn't getting on a private jet, but like, there was just so much non-optimized space that it just felt luxurious. Welcome to Travel Stories with your hosts, Tom Kim and Trevor Mountcastle. This episode, we talk about a trip down under. Tom, last time we talked about Australia, you were headed there or did head there. Now it was my turn.
It's all you, mate.
Well, we're starting out with just attempts. When I did arrive in Sydney, I heard other people say g'day. And so I go up the immigration guy and I say, g'day.
Oh my God.
The guy just chuckles at me. Like, it was like that's cute.
It's not like he gets that every day or not, you know? It's like,
No. Of course not.
Sure, he's like, oh man, another American. Damn it.
But I think that just highlights how excited we were to get back. And that was after a long, grueling trip out.
Yeah, I'm looking at this in the notes and I'm like, huh? How did you get there? It's confusing.
So let me just set the table, so to speak. We were originally supposed to be going to Morocco. And like a week before the trip, I just happened to be poking around on American's app. And I was looking, I thought, for June or December dates. And lo and behold, I was looking for January. And I see 65,000 points from, I say Reagan National, but apparently we should be saying Washington National, otherwise known as DCA.
I mean, it's called Reagan National. I mean, that is the name of the airport.
Yeah, but so somebody had, this is a tangent, but somebody had mentioned to me in private that air traffic controllers don't really like calling it Reagan. They're not happy that a...
Of course not. Because Reagan is the one that...
That airport was named. Yes.
Yeah, because Reagan's the one that did that labor action against him when they tried to strike. He fired them all.
Exactly.
So yeah, you're right. It's very ironic that an airport is called Reagan National, but you know, that was probably an FU moment to somebody.
There's your history tidbit for the episode.
Nothing to do with your trip on Down Under, I guess, yes. But if they wanted like actual structure to, you know, a podcast, they'd probably be listening like to the Air Show or something.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, we've given them enough plugs on this podcast. We're not going to give them another one. Until they give us a plug, we're done plugging them.
Yeah, okay, fine. No more plugs.
Yes, so 65,000 per person in business. I got to tell you, that got us to Auckland. And I don't know if it's the fact that we had to stop in Chicago, we took a two-hour delay in Chicago, or just the fact that you've got to go across the country, and then your flight out is just so late. Like, I mean, it's 3 a.m. body time that we ended up boarding the plane to go to Auckland.
Like midnight. West Coast time.
Yeah. Midnight West Coast time. I don't want to cut ahead, but we were talking to a friend of ours that lived there. And I think he's a mutual friend. I think you know Andy as well. He was saying that Dallas is just so much better because they leave a couple of hours earlier local time, which really is like 2 to 4 hours earlier compared to LA time. It just works out a little bit better for the body, I guess.
Well, so do you want to talk about the flights first and then we'll kind of work our way through the rest of the trip?
Yeah. So domestic flights are domestic flights. Won't spend too much time on that. Although we had a really great flight attendant and flight crew. We had a really great flight attendant and flight crew on the first flight to Chicago. So nice that they signed my daughter's book, Flight Log. The flight attendant was really, really great. And the cockpit crew gave her an American, you know, the wings. But these wings actually said crew. Because of how much she had flown, they gave her crew wings. And I don't know if that's like a special thing or not. You know, they looked at her flight log, which is not holistic, and said, wow, you've been around. You've been to places.
Yeah, I think your daughter's been pretty well seasoned and traveled, you know, for someone of her age.
Yeah. The LAX Auckland flight, shifting gears, was on a 787. So it was that sort of like front back type seat. My daughter and I conked out. My wife soldiered on and actually had a meal. They ran out of meals so that when my daughter and I woke up, we were pretty much on one of those, you know, whatever snacks they had. Probably one of the worst crews I've ever had. Well, I'll say one of the worst crews I've ever had on American.
Well, that's actually saying something, because...
Yeah, they're a bunch of bad crews, and this is the worst.
Like, who's worse than American?
I'm sure. I mean, Etihad. I had a bad Etihad flight once.
Oh, okay. Well, I've had a bad Etihad, but you know, it's not
American always, is known as bad.
Yeah. What was the vintage of the crew?
That is the crazy part. So some of them, I mean, it was a mix of age, right? There was an older woman, and then there were a couple of guys. The guys didn't look like they were terribly old, but they just didn't care just didn't know how to do their job. I'll give you an example. Whoever set up the galley didn't do it in such a way that either that individual did not convey to his fellow colleagues where things were, or he set it up in a non-standard way, or both. So when I asked for a cappuccino for my wife, which they have on the 787, they can do the espresso, right? It was either a cappuccino or an espresso. She wanted frou-frou coffee or something that was non-standard cafe americano. And they could not find the pods. They're looking everywhere. And then later in the flight, the person who did set up the galley is in the galley, and somebody walks in and starts opening cabinets. And the guy's like, tell me what you're looking for and I'll get it for you. Like, very curt, very rude. I'm a couple of rows behind the galley and I can hear this interaction.
Wow.
I mean, and then the older woman flight attendant was very, very nice. But she's like, we have no idea what the arrival requirements are here. They gave us these forms. We recommend you fill them out. We haven't been here in a while. And I'm like, you don't have anybody on your crew that has actually been to to Auckland. You fly this every single day.
I figured, isn't that kind of a job of like a purser or somebody like that?
Right.
Those type of things.
Yeah. And so it was just not a good showing for American. Then we arrive in a remote gate, which was not great, a remote stand. But they did have
like
a ramp.
Like a bus gate?
Yes, it was a bus gate. But they did have a ramp. And I thought that was good. So, it's a little narrow and
better than the air stairs.
Yeah. Yeah. With the amount of stuff that we carry on, and I usually try to let my wife just take our daughter and I try to take the rest if I can. This made it a little bit more manageable. But
I'd like to say this is like, normal, but I mean, Americans is very schizophrenic, don't you think? I mean, like, you can have really good crews, even the kind of the older vintage kind of crews. Like, there's some excellent flight attendants, that just have that kind of like grandmotherly, they really want to take care of you and make you feel at home. It sounds like you got the crew where they don't care. It's a nighttime flight. They're not expecting to deliver a lot of service. And clearly they didn't.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it was an ironic trip when you think about it, because we started out with the best possible flight crew that we could have had. On the shortest leg. Yeah. I mean, I bet you that that's probably not very high for bidding, for bidding that flight. And then, probably one of the premium routes, we had the worst crew. I don't know. It makes sense when you say it that way, because you've got the most senior people that they've already put their time in, and now they're just kind of enjoying the fruits of their labor, I guess. But you still got to put the effort in.
Yeah, they're what is it? They're no longer passionate, I guess, potentially.
Yeah, they're no longer going for great.
Yeah.
So that was sort of the getting to Auckland. We'll talk about the on the ground stuff later. We'll just stick with flights, I guess. You and I talked about the next flight. Do you remember that conversation?
Well, yeah, because I think one of the things that you've had on your list, right, for an extraordinary amount of time is you have managed not to fly American's premium Transcon A321T, right?
Oh,
like, that has somehow managed to elude you.
That has. But I think
I
we're jumping.
About that.
I think,
or maybe
I think
you're we're saying jumping. I'm jumping ahead. Okay, yeah. There's another piece. Okay.
Yeah, and it's not in our notes. It was a trick question, I guess. I had to get across the Tasman somehow, right? Get from Auckland to Sydney.
Oh, okay. And so you want to talk about your Trans-Tasman flight.
Do you know how many Fifth Freedoms there are for that Trans-Tasman flight?
I don't. I would imagine there are quite a few. I mean, there's quite a few carriers that like to have Auckland in their route map, but they don't feel like, having a nonstop flight just there.
So I found three just looking, fairly quickly. There is a Emirates Christchurch to Sydney that they fly an A380 on. I believe there's an Emirates 777 from Auckland to Sydney as well. There's, of course, LAN or LATAM. that flies Auckland to Sydney.
Was in the news recently, right? That was actually one of the ones that, isn't that the flight that had some distress recently? And they had on one of their 787s, I guess, where it had a very major altitude change that was unexpected and that caused quite a few people to get injured.
I thought that was on the Santiago to Auckland, but I could be wrong.
Okay, that might be. But it's the same aircraft, right?
It's the same aircraft that does that. Well, there's another airline that I had not prior darkened their door, and it was China Eastern.
Oh, that's right. We did talk about this. You know what? We talk about so much stuff, I forget, you know. I was going to say, Trevor, Emirates, LATAM, China Eastern. I kind of wonder why you picked that one.
Well, you know, it's funny because LATAM was going to be a 7 a.m. flight. This is one where I purely booked it based on convenience and schedule. And this was like an 11:40 flight. And the entire experience was almost exactly as you expected.
Oh.
Almost exactly. It was.
Now I got to hear this.
So checking in, it's summer holiday. So we paid for business and it was not that much. I used American Express membership rewards points, you know, the pay with points for business class. I know it's a short flight. It's like 3 hours, but I wanted to be comfortable. And when you looked at economy versus business, it was not that big of a delta in my mind. And I was not going to fly on China Eastern in economy. Just wasn't. Air New Zealand and Qantas were much more expensive, even in economy. So we made our choice. We go up and it's summer holiday in Australia. And there's this family. It must have been like 12 people. And they must have had baggage. Looked like they were going to, it looked like what you see people do going to like Africa when they like buy a bunch of stuff in the US and they bring it home. This family at 12 had like, I don't know, 14 or 18, you know, big suitcases, under the belly type suitcases. I finally get up to the to check in as they're working their stuff. There's two people doing business check-in. I'm chatting nicely with them and with the person checking us in. She's like, anything checked? I'm like, no, we pack light. And she looks at the other family and just sort of chuckles. I said to her, as we're getting our boarding passes, I said, do they happen to have, you know, premium security or expedited security here? You know, it's been so long. And she's like, the airport does, but this airline doesn't pay for it. It's just like, okay, you're setting us up well. Thank you for managing expectations.
Yeah, I mean, it's good candor. You know, it's nice and she's being nice and honest about it.
Oh, no, she was fine. She was wonderful. You could tell that she'd dealt with unsavory people and that she was happy to have a nice, you know, chill family. We get on the plane and, you know, the seats are the seats, right? They're lay flats, but they're similar to the LATAM style where it's 222 configuration. I think it's an A330, 200 or 300. They have a newer reverse herringbone seat. They just don't fly it on this route. The crew is very mechanical, like very much, you know, bring out the hot towel when you're sitting on the ground. Here's a bottle of water when you're sitting on the ground. You get in the air, here's a hot towel. Here's, and then they offered beverages. And you know me, I do like my bubbles when I'm in the air. And so I asked, and he balks at me. He's like, it's too short of a flight for that. How dare you ask for that? He's like, we have beer or soda. I'm like,
wow.
I said, no wine, no, maybe a screwdriver. Do you have, he's like, no liquor. What do you think we are? I mean, it was just absolutely hilarious. It was absolutely hilarious. And the meal was just as you'd expect, not terribly amazing. Reasonable service other than that one experience. I mean, he put my bag into the overhead, which like without even me asking, I put one bag in and like I had my back to the bag and he just put the other one in. And he was helping a woman off the plane when we arrived in Sydney. Very courteous, but, you know, fairly mechanical in the delivery of, you know, the standard service. And of course, nothing premium about flying business class on China Eastern from Auckland to Sydney.
Sounds like expectations set, expectations met, you know?
Hey, but I'll tell you, I didn't smell any smoke from the cockpit. I even used the lav up forward because I was just curious. Yeah.
I was almost excited to see what brand of what vintages of wine and bubbles were going to be on offer. I guess none is what we found out.
Well, it's even worse because I did research and there were indications that they serve Tattinger on their long hauls. And so I'm like, oh, maybe I'm going to have 2 hours and enjoying a nice bottle of Tattinger. And, you know, it's going to just be a wonderful experience. And then.
Well, so that, I guess, is our one little interlude outside of the normal Western carriers. I guess the rest of your trip was a little bit more standard, right?
Yeah, yeah. So the rest of the trip was all on American. And it was, the way I would categorize this is splurge and screw ups. So I found for $102,500, and I did it irrationally because, just as you said, I had never flown the A321T from LAX to JFK or in any other route. And so I found 102,500 miles per person, Sydney, LAX, JFK, down to DCA.
It's almost the exact reverse of what I did the year before. So
Yeah. In first class, figured the first class on the 737, on the 777-300ER is going away or changing somehow in the near term. Want to experience it one more time. And A321T.
Yeah, get to face the window, right? You know, they've got those swivel chairs, which is, you know, it is kind of a unique product. I mean, it's not like there's any other first class cabin that flies where you can, you know, face the window while you're eating your food or you know, working on your laptop or whatever.
Yeah, about that facing the window. My wife and I and my daughter, we had the two middle seats and then one of the window seats.
Okay.
As we're taking a taxi or an Uber to the airport, my seating assignment changes. And now I'm behind in the middle, behind my family.
So you're all in the center section.
Yes. And I'm almost irrationally unhappy because I'm like, okay, well, I wanted to be on one side and I wanted my wife to be on the other side. And, you know, this is going to make things complicated, et cetera. You know, like I wasn't like, I was just irrationally unhappy because I was like, we planned such a great trip and I'd already been working with some schedule issues on the long layover in LA. And I'm like, why are you just piling on here?
And I mean, it's not unreasonable to, like, you know, you pick your seats, right? You pick them for a reason. You had an expectation. Like I just said, part of the joy of flying a, you know, first class on American on a 777-300ER is the ability to face the window and no window.
Yeah. Yeah. I finally get on the plane and I had some time to cool down, had the Qantas lounge that certainly helped. And I asked a gentleman who unfortunately was hacking away the whole flight. I said to him, I said, I'm curious, how did you boot me out of my seat? He's like, this seat's broken. I recently retired. I'm an employee. I'm flying on a free ticket or, you know, mostly free ticket. So they give us the crappy seat, you know, the broken seats.
Oh, and
I'm
okay.
Like, yeah, broken first class. Not bad. Thanks for taking one for the team.
What was broken?
It didn't go flat.
Oh, well, okay. That would probably be, yeah.
Yeah.
If I had to pick, that's probably more of a problem than not being able to swivel to the window.
Just a nice example of not jumping to conclusions.
But I guess you could swivel toward Rose, right? Were you able to like face each other for dinner?
Well, she was behind us. I did it to my daughter.
Oh, okay, so you were able to face your daughter for dinner. Okay.
Yeah, yeah. The problem was she wasn't terribly interested in that. She had something on the screen. We had like
it's
poo,
a bit of a gimmick
the poo
anyway.
Or something. Yeah,
it's gimmicky.
It was. Yeah, so we get into LA at 6 a.m., we navigate all that stuff fairly easily, and we're on a 340 flight out.
Wow, that's a long layover.
Yeah, this goes back to, I booked this irrationally. I could have gotten us on a flight in, you know, the standard domestic first class back home with like an hour or two layover. And I wanted that A321T.
Hey, it's like the white whale, right? You need to slay the white whale.
I had to. And we had a really, really great guy. We went to the flagship lounge and I said, tell me what options I got here. We got a long layover. We'd love to get on this flight. And right off the bat, he's like, so the flight that you want at 8 is delayed until 10:30. The flight that your backup option for 10:30 is delayed until 1. He's like, so, you know, you think you're getting out of here early, but there's still going to be a lot of waiting, even if you can do this. And with American awards, you can't do a same day change. I didn't remember that because it had been 5 years since I've done an American award. So I kept trying to do a same day change, you know, as soon as the clock struck midnight, you know, back home, and that just wasn't working. No options, etc. And so this gentleman at the flagship lounge, I'm like, what options? He's like, you can stand by, but I can't guarantee you'll get in the cabin that you want.
Ooh.
But you don't have to take it. And I'm like, okay, seems like a win-win to me. And so he got us on the 8-something that turned into 10:30 departure and got us into first class, relatively close to each other or all of us. I think I was like 2 rows back, no big deal. And we made it. I think we landed in JFK like 6 o'clock, which was just wonderful.
Yeah. I mean, that's technically what before you were supposed to leave LA, I guess, from a time zone perspective, right? Because you're leaving at what, 3-something? That's like 6-something in on the East Coast.
Exactly. And the A321 was all that it was meant to be or made out to be. The entree options weren't amazing, but that's just American catering anyway.
I think that's, you know, even that's just catering in North America. I mean, like, how, when's the last time you had a really amazing meal in first? I mean, sometimes I get surprised by like Alaska Airlines or something, but I mean, you know, it's been rare that I've had an American or even a Delta or a United meal in premium class and thought, oh, what a spectacular dish, you know?
JetBlue, Mint. I haven't flown them in probably 6 years, but they were incredible.
They're good.
For domestic.
It's like the best of the, you know, the B team, you know, is how I still feel like it. Because, you know, you can't hold a candle to, you know, transoceanic business or first, right? You know, in terms of, and, you know, it's funny because the difference in time is not that huge, you know, because, I mean, you know, going east to west on a transcon, I mean, that's still like some cases 6 hours, and sometimes takes less than that to fly East Coast to, you know, London or something. So.
Yeah. Or Ireland.
Yeah.
Yes.
But we digress, but no, it sounds great. It sounds like you finally had an excellent experience on American Airlines and even something that, you know, someone was able to help you kind of improve your situation, which very helpful lounge staff, which is kind of one of the benefits of having lounge access.
It sold me on maintaining my Platinum Pro, candidly, so that I've got that ability to... And you know what? I might just make the stretch to Executive Platinum. It'll come down to the wire. It's going to come down to the wire just based on if I can get Citi to like close my credit card statement at the right time. The thing about that A321T, so it's comfortable. You know, it's the seat that we're all comfortable or we're all knowledgeable with,
yeah,
right? It's that
reverse herringbone, you know, 1-1-1 on a narrow body.
That 1-1 on a narrow body, though, I felt like you could dance in that aisle. That was...
wide aisle. It's a very wide aisle.
It was just so cool. It was almost eerie. It was like, am I getting on a private jet? Like, I know I wasn't getting on a private jet, but like, there was just so much non-optimized space that it just felt luxurious.
Well, you know, especially compared to when you start walking back toward business, you know.
Oh, and yeah, then it gets tight.
It gets tight. You know, it's kind of funny. You have the exact opposite experience if you're in the one cabin below.
Yeah,
which
I didn't
is
bother
not even
back.
The lowest cabin, right? So
I peeked back there, but I didn't really want to think about that. I you know, those people, they keep walking. To finish it off, so I couldn't change everything about that itinerary, right? So because we were going to get in at midnight on the original itinerary, we had an 8 a.m. flight out of JFK the following day. And since we had landed at 6 p.m., we all wanted to get home. You know, we had a nice, relaxing transcon, but we wanted to get home. And so for 4,500 Alaska miles per person, I booked us an economy on like an 8 o'clock flight, 7 or 8 o'clock flight. We got home in our beds by like 11:30, 11:45 at night.
It doesn't suck.
I mean, that was
sleep in your own bed that night.
It was like the best 13,500 points I spent, you know. Sometimes you just have to force it through, you know, make the itinerary work for you.
Yep. So sounds like mission accomplished. You got your transportation for you and your daughter and your wife. I mean, by the way, these are kind of unicorn things, you know. So I know this is something we've talked about before. So congratulations and job well done. You know, I think a little golf clap maybe, you know, for the accomplishment. It's not easy to do. Especially for more than one. I know that's it's always a challenge. Do you want to go to talk about maybe some of your lounge experiences? Because I think it sounded like you had quite a selection of One World's finest while you were on this trip.
So we'll run through that fairly quickly. I just want to, you know, something I don't know if I said at the beginning. This trip was a little bit of a dry run because we still want to take my wife, my mother-in-law to Australia. And so we wanted to kind of do a dry run of things. And the other side was this type of a trip lends itself to so many amazing lounges that I wanted to maximize those. And my wife sort of told me, hey, you're not going to be able to maximize them when we bring mom. So, you know, have at it this time. And so our normal breakfast at the Capital One Landing, Chicago, we had time. So we did flagship first. LA, you know, we went to the flagship first because, I mean, it was there. Qantas Business, hadn't been to Qantas first in a long time. They were really stringent in letting us in. They let me take one guest. And so my wife took a walk around the Tom Bradley International Terminal and then got us on the wait list for the Centurion Lounge. And my daughter and I had a nice meal, ice cream sundaes and everything. It wasn't the best approach, but my wife was very, very patient. And I think she was probably happy to have a little bit of quiet time herself as well.
Mm. It is interesting how some of those first class lounge requirements can be a little complicated, especially as far as how many guests you can bring, right?
Yeah, yeah. I get it. I totally get it. We worked with the system as they offered. We did not have the salt and pepper squid. As you know, I'm not a big seafood fan. I know that salt and pepper squid is very highly regarded in the Qantas First Lounge.
It's like the signature item.
Yeah, like the schnitzel in Lufthansa First Class, probably. Lounge.
Yeah, they seem to always have it. I don't think I've been to a Qantas First Class Lounge where it was not on offer.
Interesting. Closing out LAX, the Centurion Lounge. First time we made it there, I don't know why we never went before.
Actually, I haven't been to the Qantas Business Lounge either.
It felt like a maze, to be honest with you. The Centurion Lounge felt like a maze. I got up to go to the restroom at one point, and I almost needed like to call for help because they had this bar. Oh, they have another bar. Oh no, that's the other side of this.
As Bogota, right? Like that lounge had to be the furthest walk to a bathroom. It must have a world record or something.
Yeah. No, it wasn't that far, but it was like 10 turns, you know, 10 or 20
that
turns.
That is a lot. How do you even, like, what is the architecture? What is the architectural reason for that? Like, that you would make somebody to do that much turning?
I have no idea. It's like they just fit it in around offices or something, or other architectural features.
Well, I mean, I guess there's a lot of strange stuff in that Bradley International Terminal. They've got lots of escalators and elevators and other, you know, secured spaces. So I guess maybe there's a reason for it.
Yeah. Still a really fun terminal to be in. They have some great Star Alliance lounges too. We did a trip around those one time. The flight home or the journey home was where the real lounges that were bucket list items were.
So are they checked off now? You don't have to go again?
I would not go out of my way for the Qantas First in Sydney. I love the architectural features. The hush puppies that they had at breakfast were amazing. Like, I mean, I would say
it is a beautiful lounge. It is a beautiful lounge. They know how to do their interior design.
They really do. And the food, like I said, everybody loved the food. The hush puppies, I ordered a second serving because they were probably some of the best hush puppies I've ever had. Why? That's something that I would associate. I would never associate it with, you know, Sydney or Qantas or an airline lounge, but they were just wonderful.
I think Qantas does earn a little high praise for me for their a la carte dining, you know, in general, like as far as foreign carriers go, you know, in their first class lounges. Cause you know, I mean, don't get me wrong. Lufthansa is also amazing. Right. But Qantas is, they need to get a pretty honorable mention to say they generally do a great job, you know, whether it be LAX or Melbourne or Sydney or whatever. Oh, and we're not drinking on that one anymore, guys. Just so you know.
I just had to. I had to. The other white whale was the Chelsea Lounge.
I don't know why you want, you know, and I kind of have been trying to dissuade you just because I find the Chelsea Lounge to be one of the most disappointing first class lounges. And that's saying much because I'm not exactly thinking the Concorde room was all that amazing either. So I'm thinking it's not really that great, to be completely honest.
You know, the food wasn't amazing. I mean, the food was good. I wouldn't say it was incredible. The service was absolutely top-notch.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, definitely right up there with the Qantas First and Lufthansa First experiences. And the server that we had, really, really nice guy. They were serving, I just forgot what they were serving. They were serving Krug. And so they have like a standard.
That's the way to your heart, the bubbles.
Yes, yes. They have a standard menu that I think is all the LVMH Moët Chandon stuff, right? But then they rotate like a nice, I'll call it a super premium. Krug is super premium, I think, right? Like, I mean, right, maybe not super, super premium, but like,
I mean, you know, Krug, you know, Cristal, you know, whatever.
Exactly. Yeah.
Dom Perignon, you know, those type of things.
Exactly. And so they had Krug, and I was asking him, you know, what's tomorrow? What was yesterday? He mentions that Cristal was the day prior. And so he comes with a glass for my wife and I, each of the Cristal.
Oh, okay.
Because he just happened to have a bottle open.
I see what they did to get you. Maybe this was AA doing a really good job of, you know, basically, convincing you to go to Executive Platinum or whatever. But, you know, my beef with that lounge is not the booze or the food or the service. It's just, it's so dreary. It's like you're in a dungeon.
It's a cave. It really feels like a cave.
There's no view. Cave. There's nothing there. You know, it's just, it's really not the best environment. That's my big problem with the Chelsea Lounge more than anything else.
I agree with you on the spaces. I totally agree with you on the spaces. So do we want to try to interweave the hotels and the actual destination? I mean,
yeah, I want to hear about these hotels.
We spent so much time on the getting there and stuff because that was actually part of the experience we were going for this trip.
I mean, you know, hey, come on, guys. We're av geeks. You know, we were excited about the airplanes. Come on. But we're also excited about the hotels. Do you want to talk about the hotels first?
Yeah, let's interweave the hotels and some of the stuff we did at the destinations, if that works.
Sounds great. So let's start off, I guess, what, Auckland? I guess that's probably the first big major place that you set on terra firma?
Yeah, so we had about 27 hours on the ground in Auckland. Before I get to the hotel, I'll just say, when you arrive at Auckland's airport, they have this beautiful wooden portal, I'll call it, and a welcome in, I suppose it's Maori. And it's just a very cool vibe. And you already get that sort of, you know, closer to nature vibe that I think the Kiwis just really embody. We stayed at the Park Hyatt Auckland, which is near the, you know, the waterfront in that area. There's a Hilton that's probably about a 10-minute walk, maybe 20 minutes, that we had stayed at prior. There's a Mövenpick around, I think. Park Hyatt's clearly in a little bit of a new place, but it's in a great location. The restaurant that you have breakfast or that you can have, you know, drinks at is right on a marina. The staff wanted to give us a beautiful, beautiful upgrade. It was, you know, 8, 9 a.m. in the morning. And I and the family and I, after coming off that horrible American flight, we just wanted to, we wanted a room. We wanted to sleep. And so we took a basic room, and it was a very nice basic room. It had a nice bench, or like a kind of an L-shaped couch, I should say. It had a balcony. It just beautifully, beautifully done. And I think that's a fairly new hotel, but that staff was fantastic.
And, you know, Auckland, again, I think we've talked about it in previous, you know, podcasts, you know, when we talked, I think Joe Chung, I think, stayed there, right? And
Yeah.
Forget if Spencer stayed there as well, but I know, you know, Auckland is a weird hotel market, right? Because it's, you don't have a lot of options, right? There, so this is one of the few good options with a familiar Western chain, right, that you have in Auckland.
And it was a pretty good value with FHR. You know, probably a couple hundred dollars more than $100 or $200 more than I wanted to spend, but you get the $100 credit. They effectively tried to stack the FHR upgrade with my globalist upgrade. Had I wanted to wait around, they would have given me a 2-category upgrade. So there was like one above that they wouldn't go without me paying for it. And it was an egregious amount. So, you know, they treat their FHR folks really well. I was surprised at how well they treated us, you know, from an FHR standpoint. And the location's great. Like I mentioned, you walk out to the front of the hotel, and it's kind of on that, I don't know if that's Auckland Bay or what. And they happen to have the Sail GP. I didn't know Sail GP was a thing. But effectively,
I don't know what a Sail GP is. What is a Sail GP?
So effectively, these are sailboats. They're catamaran sailboats. I think they have like 4 crew. And, you know, they're essentially doing regattas or races. I don't fully know everything about it, but we were able to watch the sailboats both, you know, from a TV and with our own eyes. And it was really cool to be able to watch. They had a reasonably small, I call it a small, they had, I think, 3 different markers. It was kind of a quadrilateral or something for where the, you know, where, what they could sail in and where they couldn't. And so a lot of people excited. So you've got a really great vibe. The wind was ripping, which probably made it even more fun.
I can see
for
you being
everybody.
Very excited, you know, being a fan of all things nautical.
I'm not as good a sailor as I am just in general on a motor, on a powered boat. I certainly enjoy watching it and the skill that takes. Right along the water, though, they had a bunch of restaurants too. And so it was cool because
it's not exactly surprising, you know. I think if you've got a city with a, you know, a marina or a waterfront, I mean, you know, that's what should we put here? Let me guess. Restaurants, yes.
Yeah. I mean, but I don't remember all these restaurants when we were there like 10, really? 12 years ago. Oh, I mean, okay. I think this area was more built up than it had been. And they also had like a little bit of a food hall a little further down and a nice kids park area. So, I mean, it had a really nice vibe. Again, we were only there for a limited time, and so we worked with what we had.
It was a taste. Like you said, this is like the preview, right, for a future trip.
Exactly. And I think, unfortunately, for the one with the mother-in-law, we're probably going to avoid Auckland and do everything we can to just get into Sydney rather than having to do another, you know, arrive, spend a couple of days, and then get on another plane, navigate another airport.
That makes sense. I don't really know what people who have mobility issues are going to really enjoy in Auckland, you know?
Yeah, it's like a lot of walking. And
Yeah,
so that was Auckland.
Okay. Well, take us to the world of Aussies, you know?
Yeah, so the little quick hop across the Tasman, and we were in Sydney, and I have to tell you, we were last there, I think, Christmas of 2019 or 2018. I think it was 2018. And they have done so much. It's just amazing. You know, some things are still standard or are still just as great as they are. The airport link is still so incredibly easy. If you're going to hotels over by the circular key, you don't even have to get one of those cards. You just tap your credit card.
Oh yeah, I mean, that is something new, I guess. Yeah, you don't need to get the Opal card, right? You can just use your RF enabled Visa card or whatever.
Yeah, Visa, MasterCard, whatever. We used one MasterCard and one Visa. The only thing is that we needed one per person. Our daughter was free because she's under 4, but like I had to, but like my wife needed to carry one and I had to have one.
Right.
Not a big deal because I carry enough, but you know, if you're going with a family of 5, that's a lot of cards that you might need.
Okay, you know, this is your card. This is your card. This is your card.
Exactly. I mean, we did that in Milan with my mother-in-law. They had the same thing on their subway. You know, just a word there. We started out at the Intercontinental Sydney, another FHR.
I'm excited about this day. You know, I actually had a room booked here before, and I never ended up staying.
So it's a little bit of an older hotel, but it's really nice, and they've been doing a lot of work to renovate it.
Is it the one that where the bottom floor is a former government building and then there's like a tower attached to it?
Yeah, it's like the Treasury or something.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
And they have a lobby bar that's very nice, you know, that has that kind of architecture and everything. So again, this trip was a lot of trying, you know, testing things out. So I wanted to use another one of those FHR $200 credits. And that effectively meant that like I think the hotel was like, I don't know, $20. And then
would you stay there again?
Yes.
Oh, okay. Good.
Yes. They gave us like a partial view and called that an upgrade.
I hear that about this place is like, I think if you're expecting amazing upgrade, you might be disappointed because they seem to be a little stingy, you know, if you're not paying for it or, you know, have some sort of Uber status or something. I mean, even with FHR, I mean, you're supposed to get some kind of upgrade, right? But clearly they have way too many categories to pick from probably.
Yeah. I mean, they're working the system just like everybody else, but they gave us a view of the Botanic Gardens. If you craned your head, you could see, you know, the ferries going by and you might see a little bit of the Opera House.
This hotel is probably one of the closest to the Botanic Gardens, isn't it?
Oh my God, it's across the street. Yeah, I don't know how you get closer. And so we get into the room. Number one, no problem getting right into the room. Nice and easy there. Loved that. We get to the room and they had this nice little caddy of things for my daughter. They had a little bear. They had, you know, soaps. They had, I think, some wet wipes. They might have had diapers because, you know, you don't know how old the child's going
to
be.
They're so smart. I mean, you know, how much effort does it take for a hotel to do that? And how much does it really cost? But like the value to you and like kind of the impression that it's making, how huge is that?
Yeah. So having stayed at only one other Intercontinental, you know, the one that we did for that in MSP, I was like, this is a nice hotel, but it didn't really feel terribly premium. The fact that they give you that caddy immediately tells me that, yes, you are a premium hotel, not just because you gave me something, but because you thought about my needs. You reduced or removed a friction point that has made my stay better.
And this is a pretty large property. Like, it's a lot of rooms. Like, this is not a boutique hotel.
I don't know how many rooms it is, but it's definitely sizable. They redid the upper floor. I think they moved their executive lounge. It used to be on the top floor, and now it's someplace else. And they've got a nice bar that's unfortunately adult only on the top floor.
Were you able to get access to the executive lounge? I know that that's something you have to pay for usually. It's not given.
Yeah, I think they wanted like $200 or $250 a night, and I just wasn't prepared to do that.
Yeah, that's a little steep. I would probably do it for like $100 or something, you know, somewhere in that range or below. But $200 is a little high.
I could have seen $100, especially considering I had a $100 property credit.
Oh, yeah, that's a good point.
I could have seen that. Last thing on the hotel, the breakfast I thought was very good, but the coffee machine broke. They communicated that to us, yet still took our coffee order and then never came back. And
service problem.
Apparently, by the time that they eventually brought a coffee and they, from what they told us, they had to pull the coffee makers from a couple of, I guess, vacant hotel rooms. Like, so they pulled those old Nespressos to make, you know, and then tried to make that into a cappuccino, and it didn't go well. It was probably the worst coffee I've ever had. And I'm not a huge fan of coffee, so I probably don't have that much experience to be able to say I've had, you know, a lot of really bad coffee. But
that does sound interesting, just because, I mean, come on. I mean, like, coffee at a hotel breakfast. I mean, talk about the most basic, fundamental thing that you need to get right. And even if the coffee machine's broken, like, you're telling me the best option is to go grab some of the Nespressos from, you know, one of your rooms. Like, they don't have some other kind of commercial coffee urn or something that they're going to use at, you know, like one of their conference rooms or something that they can, you know, pull out and use. I mean, that just sounds asinine. Anyway,
single point of failure for such a large hotel is an operational
surprising.
Concern.
Surprising.
Of course, I did say something on Twitter or Blue Sky, I can't remember, and I had probably three or four people that responded to me and say, why on earth are you trying to get coffee at a hotel in Australia? There's so much great coffee. Just go up the street. So, you know, lesson learned there. And
I think you had breakfast included. I mean, you're gonna get breakfast anyway. So
exactly. But while we were at the Hyatt Intercontinental, we did partake of the Botanic Gardens. Had a very nice time there. We wandered around. I think we got lunch at some random hole in a wall, which, you know, food's hit or miss, and sometimes all you need is the nourishment.
Yeah, you know, it's funny. I think Sydney and Australia in general, there is some excellent food there, but not everything is stellar. I've had some kind of mediocre experiences in Australia, I think, and you know, I don't know that Australia is exactly known for their cuisine.
Yeah. But they do have some good options. Before we left that sort of CBD area and moved to a different hotel, we did go to see one of the largest Lego store in the world.
That's very far from Denmark, you know, to have such a large Lego store.
Well, supposedly Leicester Square in London was the largest. Oh,
okay.
And I think there's 2 meter, there's like discrepancy in what I've Googled. I think there's like a 2 square meter difference between the two stores. I mean, this is a 2-story store, beautiful, beautiful, just like a Lego store is. They had a Manly Ferry model that was not life size, but like they had the wheelhouse, and you could like, we got a picture of our daughter steering the ferry, for example, of the freshwater class Sydney ferries. They had koalas. They had this beautiful mosaic of the opera house on the wall built out of Legos. So they did a lot of really
like not things. A model, but a mosaic.
Yeah. I'll send you a picture. It's hard to put in words, but essentially it's one of those elevation type mosaics where they had, you know, sort of the background, and then the opera house is, you know, probably a few bricks out, you know, to kind of give it a little bit of three-dimensional.
Got it. So it wasn't completely flat. It was kind of like with a little bit of an elevation.
Yeah. The one thing I was surprised, I don't remember seeing you remember the old creator expert opera house, like the big one that probably, I don't know.
Probably don't. I don't pretend to be as Lego focused as you, but you have other reasons for that focus, which we won't get into on this episode.
Touche. Yeah, but they did have a large Lego set. I won't say large, like they've done with the Eiffel Tower, which is just bananas. But they did, Lego had that set at one point, and I was surprised that they didn't have any version of that in the store that I saw. They were much more focused on koalas, which, I mean, in and of itself is very cool, and the Manly Fairy was
Cool. I mean, sounds like a great souvenir, you know, for somebody to take home
with them. It does, yeah.
I was going to say, you mentioned fairies and Manly. I mean, I feel like you make quite a bit of use out of some of the fairies, right? From Circular.
Oh yeah. Two. Yeah. We love those fairies. They're just such a nice experience. And actually they've gotten nicer since we were last there. They've got, I think, three or four classes of ships, and they've got, I think the freshwater class is the big traditional ship that I think everybody who's seen Sydney Harbor, where they've got a bow on both ends and they sort of, they go back and forth to Manly, and it takes about a half hour, give or take, on that. Well, they now have Emerald class. I think they're Emerald class catamarans, and those only take about 20 minutes, and it's the same price. It's the same price as the Manly Express that's also a catamaran, and 20 minutes. So, I mean, you know, they've made it so much simpler. They've made it so much simpler to get around. So we went to Manly twice. And being during summer vacation, it was a very interesting experience.
Yeah. I mean, and how was it like from a weather perspective? Like, was it oppressive, or was it kind of nice to get out to Manly?
I don't know that we broke 82 degrees Fahrenheit. It was very comfortable.
Oh, okay. That's not bad.
We did have some wind, which wasn't amazing. So we had to just adapt to the wind. But we spent a couple few hours in Manly. We got down to the beach. We played in the sand. I put my feet in the water. We had a nice meal on the one day. And then the other day, we actually caught up with a friend, Andy, from Andy's travel blog. He's an expat there. And so we ended up grabbing lunch with him, which was very nice. I think we went to world famous Butter Boys cookies, and we got one of those, which was incredible. I highly recommend it.
I don't think I've had one of those. Is it just kind of like a Mrs. Fields kind of cookie, or what's special about that?
I'm trying to think. It's size-wise, it's probably closer to a Costco cookie, and it's just got a great flavor to it. Andy had said that when he comes back to the States, he'll sometimes bring, you know, 6 or 12 for his colleagues or his family, because they're just that good. And usually the line was pretty long. We got lucky that the line wasn't long at because of the time of day that we were going by. And so we did that. And now I so want to go back just for those.
Sounds like something to put on your list.
I recommend it. And if anybody's on that Google Maps that we created for like kid play areas, I think I put Butter Boys on there because there's a kid's playground right nearby too.
Well, you know, one of the things that probably should be on that list is what I think is one of the most scenic zoos in the world. I think I see on the list here that you guys were able to go to that zoo, the Taronga Zoo, which does require, I think, what, a ferry ride, right?
Go either way. And that's a great segue, by the way. You can go by land, by Uber, or you can go by ferry. We did both.
Oh, you did? Okay. One direction did, one way did by land and one by sea, I guess?
Yes. Yes. So by the time we went to Taronga Zoo, we were now staying at the Hyatt Regency over in Darling Harbour. And I say that like a Bostonian, which is not good at all.
Say, it's like, is that the,
I don't, okay. Yeah, no, it just rolled out there. Okay. We'll move past that. So anyway, we had made the decision that if we were going to go down to Circular Quay, we were going to just take a cab, because otherwise it was going to take like a half hour and we weren't going to make it to the zoo for a rope drop. And so it was the same price to go to Circular Quay as it was to go to Taronga Zoo. And I said, okay, well, no brainer there.
That makes a decision up. Yeah.
And so we didn't have to deal with the shuttle. They have a shuttle that brings you, or that can bring you up from the ferry. It looked to me like you could enter the zoo from the ferry area as well, but you would never want to do that, in my opinion, because then you're going up the entire time.
All uphill.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's all uphill. Yeah.
So we ended up starting at the top and moving our way down, and it was just so wonderful. We didn't get that perfect giraffe shot overlooking.
Oh my God, I love that giraffe shot. It's like the best. You know, it's like those giraffes are so spoiled. Like they have like the most amazing, you know, skyline view of, I would imagine, any mammal in captivity.
Yeah, and they looked like they were enjoying it, but I just couldn't get the right angle to get the opera house in the photo. And they were also looking down a lot. I guess it was just hot. But they have a couple of lions that my daughter liked. They had a tiger, which was cool. The way they do their kangaroos and wallabies is you sort of walk into an enclosed area. you've got two doors, and there's a couple of minders that stay in there, and you stay on a path, and you know, a kangaroo might just want to hop by. And it's just kind of a cool experience.
It is a very cool experience. I think they also have like a koala encounter thing, but I actually find that koala encounter is, or at least when I did, and by the way, this is probably like a decade ago, but I thought it was very kind of underwhelming compared to what you can get like in some place like Brisbane or some of the other areas in Australia where there you can get much closer and you can get much nicer photos.
Yeah, I didn't see anybody partaking of the koala encounter. But
yeah, I think you're better off skipping.
Yeah. Brisbane is definitely where I'm going to do it. They had a cool thing in that area where you could kind of do like a rope walk over the animals and stuff, which seemed interesting. Some people were doing that. Not really something that my family didn't feel age appropriate. They had a gorilla that was very interesting. Didn't really want to interact too much, but we were able to see him. I can't remember a lot of zoos that have gorillas. So I thought that was a pretty cool experience.
Well, I mean, they're kind of scary. You know, you don't want to get too close to a gorilla.
No, he was pretty chill. He was chill. I mean, lions are scary too, but they're in every zoo around.
That's true. Well, I mean, it does sound like the Taronga Zoo has a lot of upcharge opportunities, although it sounds like, you know, the things that I find the most, you know, unique about it are free, right? It's that amazing view of the Sydney skyline.
Yeah, and they had a amphitheater sort of a water show. I can't remember whether it was seals or otters or what. We didn't have the chance to stop there. We were just sort of getting a little peckish at that point. But that I think is a free option too. Getting down a little bit further in the zoo altitude wise, it felt like the more the water based stuff, the penguins and stuff, those areas looked like it needs a little bit of, you know, restore and repair. Yeah, it needs some TLC. Nice, but you know, you could see the experience was kind of hampered by a little bit of that wear and tear.
So were there any other kind of interesting or new experiences you had? You know, this being not your first time to Sydney, but what is this? What, like fourth, fifth?
Tenth?
You've been there a lot. Yeah. Anything new and surprising that you hadn't experienced before?
Well, I'll close out the zoo with, I never even knew a red panda was a thing, and they had one. And we did get to see a red panda, which was really cool. And it was even more cool because he was like chilling, and then he saw a handful of us, you know, coming closer to look at him, and he decides to walk closer to us on like one of the branches. And we're like, oh, I guess you want to be a showboater. We'll take it. He gave us a good few photos, and I just never knew they existed.
Yeah, it definitely sounds like Taronga Zoo is great for, I mean, it definitely seems to hit above its weight for animal encounters, right? You know, because, you know, there are a lot of great zoos in the world, and I'm sure you've been to quite a few of them. But, you know, Taronga in particular, I feel like between that enclosure area and just some of the other kind of ways that the zoo is kind of architected and laid out, it does lend itself to some more of those intimate encounters with some of the animals.
I think I put it on too high a pedestal because of that great view and a lot of the material. Really made me think this is going to be on par with the San Diego Zoo. And I hate to say it, it's just not there.
I mean, the San Diego Zoo is up there. I mean, you're not talking about like low echelon zoo here.
I know. It felt like the Taronga Zoo was going to be competitive to the San Diego Zoo. And I mean, I feel like it's probably not as competitive as I expected it to be. Still a great experience. Really happy to have gone. It was $100 Australian for the two of us, and our daughter was free. It felt a little bit on the steep side, which is, I guess, a contributing factor of why I was expecting more San Diego Zoo versus, you know, like the Vienna Zoo or Healesville Sanctuary.
Was this your first trip, or had you been there before?
I'd never been there before, no.
Oh, okay.
We'd done Healesville Sanctuary in Melbourne or in Yarra Valley, and we just found that to be amazing. And I'll be honest with you, other than the view and some of the big animals and the red panda, like if you just want to see Australian animals, the Healesville Sanctuary is probably better.
I would probably agree with that. I think if you actually want to see the Australian fauna and wildlife, there are other you know, places within the country that will give you a better experience. But at the same time, if you have not been to the Taronga Zoo and you're in Sydney and you have the time, I don't see a reason why you wouldn't keep it on your list, right?
Oh, 100%.
Would you disagree?
100%. You get the ferry ride experience. You get the views. I mean, it's a really nice experience, and our daughter just loved
it. It's a good combination, right? Because, you know, I mean, to be able to be kind of have that urban scenery and be in nature simultaneously with, you know, the water feature and to be able to maybe take a ferry. I mean, like, that combination is not easily found elsewhere in the world.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
So where shall we go next in your Aussie adventure?
Yeah, so I guess we can close out with about 3 points. We did actually walk by the Opera House, just as everybody must. We're not spending as much time talking about it because everybody talks about it.
We've done it, been there, done that. You know, it's like old hat, right?
Yeah. For my father's 70th, my brother and I took him to Sydney and a number of other places. And one of the places we went was Paddy's Market, which is one of those kind of, you know, bartering type markets or negotiating, whatever you want to call it.
Flea market, you know, touristy market, you know. Straw market.
And as memories go, you always remember it bigger than it was. And so we're walking through here because my father wanted a couple more shirts that he had gotten 10 years ago. I felt like it was a little bit smaller, but it was, you know, that same great vibe. You see the durian, you know, because they had some fruits and vegetable as well.
It might be smaller, you know, honestly, because, you know, I've been there more than once now as well. And I do remember it being bigger for some reason. And I'm wondering if just the way that they've laid it out has changed because, you know, there's a lot more food vendors and other like traditional retail in that facility than there was, I think, when I went there the first
time. And I feel like there's a whole lot more dead ends. Like there were like 3 or 4 times that we make a turn and we're like, oh, we can't go there. I think still a really nice place to be, especially nice because we were there a few days before Chinese New Year's. And so you're walking through Chinatown and everything and. Just a nice vibe. We ended up actually walking a lot, which was wonderful. Sydney is just such a walkable city. It was a walkable city last time we were there, and it's even more so now. And so we walked down Pitt Street, which is their, you know, in some parts it's a pedestrian street where the Lego store is. We walked over in the Rocks. Really great improvements there. We talk about the pandemic and a lot of the negatives. I still think the pandemic brought a number of positives. Some will disagree. The QR codes, when they work and when you have connectivity, are helpful. I'll say helpful. I'm not going to say game changer. People will go both ends of that. I know we've had Jeff, who was on the show for the episode 8 for that guy's trip, and he felt very strongly about QR codes to the opposite. And then in the Rocks, for example, that one street, and I can't remember what that street is, that's just one away from the circular quay, they've actually made it such that all those restaurants and bars now have permanent outdoor seating. And so it just makes it a really nice vibe. And so we definitely sat there for a little bit. We wandered through the Rocks. And then if you go around the Rocks, you've got Walsh Bay has a bunch of piers, and that's over where the Sydney Pier 1, Sydney Harbor, Marriott Autograph Collection Hotel is. It's also where they depict NCIS Sydney's headquarters is, or their office. So if you're an NCIS fan.
Are there a lot of NCIS Sydney fans? I mean, I'm aware of the show, but I've never watched an episode.
They had a short initial season, and then they kick off their next season sometime in February. I like it because I pick up other little pieces, other little quips of how Australians talk, different little words here and there. You know, I'm looking forward to seeing it more. I mean, for me, though, I like NCIS Sydney also because you get views of a city that I love. You know, it's probably
It is a very scenic, it's a pretty and very scenic city.
It's probably why.
There's probably a reason why they've picked that city to base a show.
I mean, it's probably why people sometimes watch New York City shows. Right? Because you get to see the Statue of Liberty and just the beauty of Manhattan and everything. You know, there's something about familiar. I think that there's something cool there. When you pass Walsh Bay, though, is where the real change has happened. So in the old days, last time we were there, you could walk to Walsh Bay and then you had to like go in city streets and go around construction and everything. Now they have this area called the Barangaroo. It's got to be, you know, a couple miles. And it gets you all the way to Darling Harbour.
Oh, okay. Got it. I think I'm understanding what you're talking about.
And so you can now walk along the coast or along the water all the way from the Opera House, really all the way from the Botanic Gardens, around up to the Opera House, down to Circular Quay, up past the Park Hyatt, under the bridge, over Walsh Bay, then to Barangaroo, then to Darling Harbour. And it's a really nice experience. Wide pedestrian walkways. There's two different beaches. So they're, I call them beaches, but they're rock beaches, but they have, you know, railings so you can go in or you can jump in. People lay out there. I mean, it's just a really cool area. They're putting in an amphitheater. They've got other venue type things.
You're really just kind of reacting to a lot of the redevelopment, right? Because these are all kind of like industrial piers and other kind of like areas that, you know, back in the day, you know, where the ships actually needed to offload their cargo or if they needed to, you know, do other things, that's what this area was. And now they really have done, you know, 100% of that redevelopment where, of course, Sydney has amazing demand for real estate, right? So I think they probably were very motivated to kind of repurpose this area that they don't need for industrial purposes anymore. Now it sounds like it's a kind of mixed use residential slash hotel tourist, you know, visitor kind of area, right?
No, it's mostly just green spaces.
Oh, you think there's a lot of green space?
Yeah, there? Like okay. Between Walsh Bay. So they call it the Barangaroo Reserve. And you've got right along the water, you've got green spaces, you've got a bike path, you've got a walking path, and you got a couple of areas, like I said, where you can get in the water. And then you get into the more, you know, mixed stuff.
More like Witches and Darling Harbor and that area, which is also, I think, had a pretty big, I think, transformation as well. I mean, not that it wasn't already built up a couple of years ago.
Oh, yeah. They put in a casino.
They seem to be very much... Yeah, they're just constantly, you know, redeveloping, you know, even areas that weren't really that old. But, you know I stayed there, was the last time I was there at the brand new W Hotel that was right there that didn't exist.
Yeah, that hotel looks beautiful.
It is. It's a nice place. It was a nice place.
Yeah, we drove by it on the way to the Taronga Zoo and we walked under it. Right in that hotel, by the way, there is, or I guess, you know, in Darling Harbor, at, like under the hotel, there is
an IMAX theater.
No. Gelato, a gelateria.
You were going to talk about the
and they have blood orange gelato, and it was incredible.
They have blood orange gelato in a lot of places. Although I've had blood orange gelato in some places, and I've it was like way too sour and bitter. I was like,
this one had a good balance of flavor. I mean, it was part of a chain, but we went to like probably four or five, maybe more than that, gelaterias. We always find the gelato. Wherever we are, we try it. And I don't often see blood orange. So this one was
really
pretty good.
I see it all over the place. Really? It's very Italian, I think. Very Italian.
You know, in Italy, they had amaretto, but they only had it like for that one night. I think I said on the French and Italian Riviera episode.
There seems to be a pattern around amaretto and frozen desserts for you. I think I see there's just like bubbles. I feel like there's some commonality.
You like what you like.
In your preference.
You like what you like.
I will say, you know, so your second hotel you stayed at, right? The Hyatt Regency Sydney, that's in Darling Harbor. Isn't it
is. And it was, and I don't know if it still is, but when it opened, it was the biggest hotel by rooms in the entire country. Mm. And I had stayed there for New Year's. 2017 to 2018, I think. It was either 2017 to 18 or 18 to 19. 17 to 18. The lounge was gorgeous at that time. They've turned that into a function room. And now the lounge is lacking.
Is it no more?
No, it's still there. It took up like, I don't know, probably four or five rooms. And it's still, you know, a Darling Harbor view on the same floor. But it just lacks the care and the beauty that the old lounge had. They've done some renovations, but and if you look at the pictures look like a Regency. I will tell you, our room looked just about the same as I remembered it when we were there, you know, 7 to 10 years ago.
Well,
and it's unfortunately a 4 points. It's a 4 points.
Yeah,
experience. I mean,
that's where that. Yeah, because that was what the bones of the hotel were, right? It originally was. It was built as a 4 points or at least that one incarnation prior to this. Right?
Yeah, yeah. And that's the problem. When the bones are a 4 points, it's hard to class it up to a Regency.
I've yet to stay there, but the location seems okay, right? I mean, I think it seems like a good place to kind of explore Darling Harbor in the area. And probably pretty reasonable walking to Chinatown and Patty's Market.
Oh, yeah. Too. We walked almost everywhere except for obviously Taronga Zoo. I mean, it's so walkable, very easily walkable, even with a little bit of the hills that Sydney has. Your location at Darling Harbor, the hills are not as steep as opposed to if you're going from Circular Quay up to the Intercontinental. That's a steep hill. That's a hill that, you know, you probably wouldn't take somebody with limited mobility, you know, or impacted mobility, for example. you might try to
but
find
there are other
another
ways
way
around. You can find another path. Like, you don't have to take that most direct path with the highest elevation.
Well,
change.
What we found across the street is a cool little, it's an office building, but they have a little food hall in it, and you can actually go in at a lower level, like a couple of blocks over, get into an, you know, then get in there, get an
elevator,
and then you're up at that level. You know, it's the random things that you learn that, you know, when you have an eye for, you know, an eye or a sensitivity for that, if you look, you usually find.
Well, I mean, you know, if you're used to, you know, working with your family member or helping to accommodate your family member to the terrain. Yeah, I think it starts becoming more of a sixth sense, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. So I'll just finish to say, going back to Sydney felt so good because it felt so familiar. And it was so nice to see things that were, you know, in transition in their final form. And I have to say, the planners or whoever did Barangaroo, my gosh, they knocked it out of the park.
Yeah, I mean, there's probably a reason why, you know, it's one of those cities that people keep coming back to, and it's so easy. I mean, of course, they speak the language that, you know, we're used to, and, you know, and there's a lot of, it's got a lot going for it, right? It's just a little hard to get there sometimes, especially with four people in premium class.
Oh my God. Yeah. I still can't get over. We've flown 18 hours and 45 minutes Singapore to JFK and so many other itineraries. Even flying, you know, Dallas to Sydney is easier. It's that transcon. And then you add a connection on the way. It felt so much easier on the way home. Even though we had that connection to JFK, it was an hour. It wasn't you're on, you know, on a plane for 2 hours, then you're on the plane for 4 hours and all that other stuff. It was a little bit easier, but that.
Yeah, it's just a little bit more inconvenient for us East Coasters, you know, for us, you know, for those DC-based flyers or those, you know, New York City-based flyers even. We're just a little bit more, it requires just that much more effort, right?
Yeah. The interesting thing is that Qantas flies Sydney, Auckland, JFK. And at one point, I had found four seats at like 216,000 Qantas points a person. And I'm going to be honest with you, after the slog that I did going out, I'm pretty sure that I would have paid that. I'm pretty sure if I could find four seats for this trip, at least one way I'm paying that.
Wow. Well, I mean, hey, there's a reason why, you know, Qantas wants to do this Project Sunrise thing, right? I mean, there's a lot of people that'll pay that premium because, like you said, I mean, it is not, I mean, adding that extra 5 or 6 hour flight, you know, to the end of what already is a very long transoceanic flight is very tough. It's a hard travel day.
It is. It really is. But hey, you know, you get to a great place, you get to see new things, and, you know, these are all first world problems.
I don't think we're going to shed too many tears for you, Trevor. Mr. I'm sipping Krug and Kristall on my way back from Sydney in first class. Yeah.
I have to say on that point, being able to sip properly. So you have to realize for a second, right? I don't think I've actually ever had Krug or Kristall at sea level. So being able to. I know this sounds weird, right?
Is that even possible? You're telling me you've never had Kruger Kristall at sea level. You've only had them in the air.
Well, because I don't think Japan Airlines opens the Kristall until you're in the air. And I don't think the other, I could be wrong. Maybe in Hong Kong, Cathay opens the Krug early.
I'm trying to remember which lounges served some of these things at one point, you know, because I feel like, you know, different lounges obviously have served different premium booze at different times, but, and we're probably not at the height of that for the most part. Because I think there's been a lot of movement there.
But, I mean, I've had Bollinger in Lufthansa First Class Terminal, but I don't think they've ever offered Krug or Kristall. So anyway, to finish.
I'm trying to remember too. And I don't pay as much attention to this as some other people that I know. And are interested in the temperature, which was what I thought where you were going with this. I was like, I thought you were going to have a big tirade about, oh, well, it was not at the right temperature.
No, it was perfect. So on the ground at sea level. At the perfect temperature and being able to do a taste test between two super premium wines like Krug and Kristall. I'm here to tell you, Kristall knocked it out of the park.
Oh, so you're a Kristall man.
I was very impressed with the flavor. I mean, Krug just came off just a little bit more yeasty to me. But this is not a champagne podcast.
Krug is a little drier than I like. Yeah, for me, Krug is a little drier than.
But the way they do that foil in the bottle is just so cool. Like it's a cool look of the design of the bottle. But I mean, Dom Perignon's got a cool cool design too.
Yeah, they do too. And with Cristal, like that's a pretty premium looking bottle too. Usually, well, it's usually unwrapped by the time you see it.
That's true.
You know, I guess if you buy it at the
store. That's a good point. Yeah, I didn't think of that. The the buy it at the store versus when they present it to you just before they're gonna
Well, they're not gonna be leaving. They're not gonna be putting an ice in like whatever foil or whatever that it's covered in.
Right? That's true. Okay, well, there's your champagne corner.
Well, I guess it wouldn't be a Travel Stories talk with Trevor if we're not talking about some kind of champagne, I guess.
Yeah, I'm going to go with that. Well, that's the show. Thanks for joining us, and we hope you enjoyed listening.
If you've enjoyed this episode, consider becoming a Milenomics Patreon member and get even more access to in-depth miles, points, and travel content.
And even the occasional champagne content. Until then, we hope your next story is a travel story.
Or a champagne story.